Hello, everybody. Welcome back to your monthly episode of the Creative Differences Podcast. I am Dallas, and I want to say thank you, Dan Trachtenberg, for making me a fan of Elle Fanning while simultaneously giving me two Elle Fannings. What a treat.
I'm Cassie, and since the last time we recorded, I found out which of my friends loves me the most.
Love that for you.
And I'm Demi, and part of the reason why it took us a month to get to another episode is because I went to Portland to go see Cassie. Well, kind of.
And so I figured out which of my friends loves me the most.
Kind of, yeah.
Welcome to another episode of the Creative Differences Podcast, your one-stop shop for movie reviews, Fancast Fridays, Throwback Thursdays, although we haven't done those last two in a while, and a number of other pop culture-related items. Today, we're talking about a whole bunch of stuff because last week we had to cancel our recording. Today, we will be talking about The Running Man, Now You See Me, Now You Don't, Predator Badlands, Frankenstein, The Witcher, and All Her Fault.
So many things, because we do this once a month. And like a lot of things came out just in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So I think everything we're reviewing is from like the last 2 weeks.
Hopefully not once a month, because this week Wicked is coming out. And I'm going to make sure that gets reviewed.
It's going to be a big week. The furries are also in town because Zootopia 2 is coming out as well. So Cassie is a furry snob. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Gabby's not here. Y'all know Gabby's not here. You can't hear her. She went to research if Donald Trump was actually giving Bill Clinton that old Nancy Reagan. She will report back in maybe our next episode. I don't know. She probably won't be there.
Part of me is so glad that I have stayed off of social media for like the last few months, because I don't want to know what that reference is to.
It's a weird time. A weird time on the internet.
Yeah, it's bad.
Anyway, before we get into the episode, please like, share, and subscribe. Hit those buttons wherever you are listening, and maybe you could win a lifetime supply of fun Twinks. If you're wondering why I said that, stay tuned for the end of the episode.
Oh, God. All right, let's get started. We're going to start us off with the most recent movies that came out. Let's start with The Running Man.
The Running Man is directed by Edgar Wright. You know Edgar Wright. He made the Cornetto movies, Hot Fuzz, Shaun of the Dead, The World's End. He made Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. He made Baby Driver. He made Last Night in Soho. The movie was written by Edgar Wright and Michael Bacall, who wrote Scott Pilgrim, Project X, and the Jump Street movies, 21 and 22. The movie stars Glenn Powell, William H. Macy, Lee Pace, Michael Cera, Amelia Jones, Daniel Ezra, Jamie Lawson, Homan Domingo, and Josh Brolin as Dan Killian. It is based on the 1982 Stephen King book of the same name, and the IMDb summary is: a man joins a game show in which contestants allowed to go anywhere in the world are pursued by hunters hired to kill them. So yeah, Running Man. I liked it. I didn't like it as much as I thought I would.
Same.
Because the main reason I went was like, oh, snap, Edgar Wright made an action movie. I'm with it. And yeah, it didn't. We can get into it. It didn't feel as Edgar Wright-y as I was hoping.
Yeah, we didn't get all the Edgar Wright-isms that I really, really would love to have seen.
Yeah. There are a couple things that I'm like, maybe one thing that I was like, ah, there's that Edgar Wright style. But most of it didn't really have that.
Yeah.
But I had fun. It's a fun time.
Yeah, I enjoyed the movie. I personally am a fan of Glenn Powell. I think he is this generation's Tom Cruise, which is actually kind of cool, minus the Scientology. He's just such a charismatic actor. I'll follow Glenn Powell through a movie, through some wild stuff, you know.
Yeah, he is a very fun guy to watch, and I think that goes a long way with this movie because it has a great cast, and I enjoyed the performances from pretty much everyone.
Yeah.
And having him as a leading man was like, I'm still with this, even though like it's not giving me everything that I was hoping for. This is a fun guy to watch and a fun guy to root for.
Yeah, I really liked this cast. I was surprised to see Daniel Ezra in this movie, who is probably most well known for All American. He's very good in this movie. Also, once again, not English. I am a huge, huge fan of Jamie Lawson, and I have been since The Batman came out in 2022. And I am begging Hollywood to put her in more prominent roles.
Yeah, I'm always happy to see her.
Yep. Fantastic. We loved her as Pearline in Sinners. So,
Pale Moon.
Continue to put her in things because it makes me happy. Even her short little cameo in The Penguin made me very happy.
Oh, yeah.
Colman Domingo is one of my favorite actors out there right now. Again, another actor who's just so charismatic.
I feel like Colman Domingo is a perfect pick. Or if you have to get people on board with watching murder and you need someone very charming and charismatic, like, get Coleman in there.
The fuck?
That's his role in the movie, Cassie. I don't know what to tell you.
He's the host of a game show where they're encouraging the audience to really want to watch people die. It's very Hunger Games in that manner. Or perhaps maybe Hunger Games is very The Running Man in that matter.
Yeah.
Our friend Sid made the comparison to his character, to Stanley Tucci's character in the Hunger Games movies, as well as like his performance, like just this really charismatic host who's really good at his job. But man, Coleman Domingo like exudes just charm. I've never seen that man not be charming, even when he's being the most evil person alive. And I'm not even talking about this movie.
He's always charming. You can't help it. But also one thing I want to point out, I watched the Cinema Wins for the original. Shout out Cinema Wins.
Mm.
And I didn't know anything about that movie before watching that video.
I was today years old when I found out that there is already another Running Man movie.
Well, here we are. Yeah, it was Arnold Schwarzenegger, which is why his face is on the money in the movie.
Yeah, that explains a lot.
Reboot. Yeah. One of the interesting things they did with this one is they split one character into two, because in the original, the host is also the main bad guy. So Josh Brolin and Coleman Domingo are basically one character.
Mm. Yeah, I like that choice.
Yeah, and it's funny because it's the guy who used to host Family Feud back in the day, Richard Dawson.
Okay.
It's like, he's got his game show back, but I think this is great because you can have Josh Brolin just be evil but not have to be all extra charming. And then you have Coleman just being the face of the show.
Which is typically how that works.
Yeah, like you're going to have the evil pull strings guy behind the scenes, and then you're going to put someone in front of camera who can like make everyone love you and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, but that kind of leads me to like another thing that I actually really liked about the movie were like the thematic elements. Like, I feel like when this, I don't know. I've never read the original book. I don't know how accurate this movie is to the original book, so maybe I'm wrong. But like, the dystopian elements of this movie don't feel too far in the future. They actually just feel like things that we're dealing with today. The movie feels very anti-capitalist, very anti-billionaire executives. It's very much about propaganda and what happens when you privatize news sites, when you privatize the police, when you privatize all these things that should be public entities, and how you can control the masses through those things, through misinformation, through keeping people ignorant, and also the way that these things have an impact on the health and the well-being of those who are in the lower class.
Yeah, I think the movie hits all those notes very hard, as it should.
Very, very not subtle about it. We are very loud. And
yeah,
looking at the situation we are currently in this world, we should be very loud and unsubtle about it.
Yeah, we're about to have our own little dystopia. But a couple things about the cops. In this movie, they're called goons.
Yeah, so AGAB.
Saw that on the wall. That was great. A lot of gooning going on. And
no.
lot of gooning going on. And one of my favorite moments in the movie, Michael Cera, as he's killing a bunch of crooked cops, screams, "I like my bacon extra crispy." And Michael Cera screaming, "I like my bacon extra crispy," while killing a bunch of crooked cops. Even though I didn't love this movie like I wanted to, I want this movie nominated for an Oscar just for that moment.
There is a lot to really like about this movie. Like,
yeah,
I had fun watching it, and I thought that it was just like a really enjoyable experience. I think your wife called it like a B movie. It feels like one of those types of movies from the 80s. Feels very much like an 80s movie. And I do love me an 80s action film.
Yeah, it is a remake of an 80s movie. Like, the most 80s action movie. Like, and that's one thing that I almost wish I didn't watch that video about the original. Because one thing that did underwhelm me was the hunters. Because in the original, they all have fun, like, flavors and their own names. They have a dude named Sub-Zero. A guy named Buzzsaw who walks around with a chainsaw. They have a guy named Fireball who shoots fire. And in this one, it's just like four nobodies and one main guy who wears a mask. And I'm like, yo, Edgar Wright could have so much fun with five specialized hunters, like the way he did like the Evil Exes in Scott Pilgrim, which obviously was an adaptation as well. But like, that's another thing that's just, there's so much potential there. Like, let Edgar Wright just go crazy with five scary dudes who all hunt you in different ways. But now we just have like four randoms and one guy with a mask. And when the guy took off the mask, I was just like, oh, I think I know that guy. Which isn't a fault in the movie, but it is like, if you're gonna make me wait for a face reveal, I feel like the face should be more like, oh, snap, it's freaking The Rock. I don't know. I don't know why The Rock was the first person I named. It's not going to be him. But like, oh, snap, it's that person. Not like, hey, I think I've seen that guy in something. But the guy did a good job as like main hunter number one. So can't be mad at the performance.
Yeah, his performance is great. I think everybody gives a really good performance in this movie. I had a thought. It left me. Oh, I like the look of the world that they created. Like it doesn't look too far in the distant future, which might be horrifying in and of itself.
A little bit.
But also like, I feel like we don't, like the movie's pacing is just so breakneck that we don't spend enough time in the world for us to really question too much about it. So like, we can't really like nitpick it. It's just like, this is the world we're in. Go with it. Right. And that's kind of nice. I don't know. I've gotten a little tired of like constantly having fan bases and stuff nitpicking like why doesn't this work in this world? And why doesn't this work in this world? It's like, hey man, we made the world just enough for this one movie.
The internet is exhausting. It's an exhausting place to like anything, especially movies.
Suspend your disbelief for 2 hours.
This was fun, right? Did we all like this? Like, well, no, I didn't, because how does the mailbox work? It's like, all right, guys, leave me alone.
I mean, that is a good question. I don't understand how the mailbox works. However, it doesn't take away from like how much I liked the movie. Like, that's just, we're having fun out here, guys.
Yeah, it's a future mailbox. Let it be fun.
That's a wild, wild way to send mail.
Pretty convenient, I guess. I don't know. It seemed to work for them. I didn't expect to talk about the mailbox as much.
I didn't either. I wasn't expecting it at all. But
Josh Brolin was good, as he always is.
I like the cast.
We haven't really talked about him much.
Just in general. People would pop up that I was like, I didn't know you were in this movie. I really like you. David Zayas, who...
Oh, yeah. He's in there for a little bit.
He's there for like a scene, but it's like the opening scene. And I know him very much from Dexter, and his character on Dexter is like one of the greatest guys ever, which is why his character is probably still alive. I haven't watched the most recent series, so I don't know. Okay. The last time I checked, he was still alive. To see him play such a douchebag, I was like, oh no, this isn't right. This isn't okay.
Yeah, I've seen him. I think I only really know him as Tina's husband in
On the Bear.
Yeah, for like that one episode.
I think he's in 2 episodes.
Why not?
I think he was in this most recent season, but I think he was only in a scene. So,
okay, I can see that. Yeah, it's a fun time. It's not as fun as I expected going into an Edgar Wright action movie, but I think all of my, not all of them, but like most of my disappointment just comes from
expectations
versus execution. So like the movie itself is good. I think if you just want to have a fun action movie and you're not going to let expectations weigh you down too much, I definitely recommend it. Also, you want to see some goons gooning, doing their thing, and some fun twinks.
Oh, Lord. Speaking of fun movies, right before I went to go see The Running Man with you, I went to go see Now You See Me, Now You Don't, which is directed by Ruben Fleischer, who directed the Zombieland movies Venom and Uncharted. It is written by Seth Graham Smith, who wrote the Lego Batman movie, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, and my favorite of them all, Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
Nice.
That's my favorite of his filmography. It was also written by Michael Leslie, who is known for writing The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes, speaking of Hunger Games. And he also wrote Assassin's Creed and Macbeth, the one starring Michael Fassbender. And it is also written by Rhett Reese and Paul Wernick, who are most well known for writing the Deadpool movies and the Zombieland movies. And the movie stars Jesse Eisenberg, Woody Harrelson, Dave Franco, Isla Fisher, Justice Smith, Dominic Sessa, Ariana Greenblatt, Rosamund Pike, and Morgan Freeman. And the IMDb summary is, a diamond heist reunites retired horseman illusionists with new performers as they target dangerous criminals. There is one criminal.
All right.
And it is Rosamund Pike.
Oh, fuck yeah. She's
which means I love
so
it.
Good at playing a bitch.
Yeah, she seems like a dangerous criminal.
I love Rosamund Pike. When she is playing the world's worst person, she's great. Again, we have an anti-capitalist movie. Because she's playing an exec.
Of course.
She's playing like a CEO of a diamond company or something like
that. Yeah, that's evil.
Yeah, I think she's also playing South African, which is...
All right. That's targeted.
Interesting.
I don't know. I read somebody say that she's using a South African accent, but the character's family, her father is from Germany.
Oh, which no.
Tells oh, you no. enough. Exactly.
It doesn't have to be Nazis, but...
It does in this movie. So Anyway, they finally did the thing with the title, as you can see. Now you see me, now you don't. They finally did the thing, which I'm very happy about. I said this in my Letterboxd review. I appreciate that these movies are like the Mamma Mia movies of heist and magic movies. Like, we're just here to have a good time.
Like, we're not out here curing cancer. We're just having fun.
We're here to have fun. And you can tell that the cast really enjoys making these movies because they keep coming back to make them. And it just looks like they're all having fun, which I think lends to like the audience having fun. I had a good time. It also does feel like every time they make one of these movies, they're just like, let's make some cool little illusion set pieces. Let's do some like fun little magic-y things that you can do with like a heist. Is magic real? Are these all just illusions? Let's come up with the most like convoluted plot twist for the end of the movie. And then we'll get out of here. And just, we had a great time for 2 hours. And you know what? As somebody who was having a kind of annoying day before I went into the theater, I respect that. I just needed 2 hours of just having a good time. And I did. I am a fan of just about every single person in this cast. I think the only person who I had never seen in anything before was Dominic Sessa, and he does a really good job in this movie.
Okay.
I feel like, you know, Jesse Eisenberg, Woody Harrelson, Isla Fisher, Dave Franco, they all know their characters well enough by this point that it's just like, even though Isla Fisher hasn't been back in like 13 years, 12 years or something like that, because she was only in the first movie.
Right.
Yeah, because they had Lizzie Kaplan in the second movie.
They had Lizzie, yeah.
Mm-hmm. They know their characters. They know like the character types that they are playing, and like they're really good at it. Also, these writers have written for Jesse Eisenberg before and Woody Harrelson before. So it's really easy for them to just kind of like know the voices that they want to give to these characters and know how these actors are. I liked the additions of Justice Smith and Ariana Greenblatt, who are actors who I love. Whenever I see Ariana Greenblatt in something, I just immediately get very excited because she has just been this very young talent ever since we probably all first saw her in, I want to say, Infinity War as young Gamora. And she has just been in franchises ever since, killing the game.
Mm-hmm.
Now she is young Ahsoka on the Ahsoka show, and she was phenomenal on that. But yeah, it's like, it was fun getting to see her play like, I guess, like a young adult, not a teenager, not a kid, but a young adult.
Yeah.
And that was really interesting for me. I love Justice Smith. I just think he's a fantastic actor. Everything I've seen him in, he's always very good. But yeah, it's just, it's a lot of fun. It's just a fun movie. You shut off your brain for 2 hours. You watch some people do some magic. They've got this really cool set piece where they're clearly messing. Like, they go to a castle that's just full of old magical artifacts, like from like the greatest magicians like of all time. And there's like a room that they go into. It's like an illusion of like size, and it's very cool to see like them. They do an action sequence in it, and it's so cool to see like them play with that. There's nice. Like two rooms that are like full of mirrors. There's one room that's like upside down, and it's a rotating room. I love stuff like that. So yeah, I think they just had a really, really good time. This movie also gets bonus points for me because the end credit song was made by Renee Rapp. So never underestimate my love of Rosamund Pike and Renee Rapp.
Sensing a pattern here.
Anyway, my hyperfixation of the movie is that they finally got more than one female lead at a time in these movies. There's one thing I wish I could talk about in this movie, but I feel like it would be a spoiler because it wasn't promoted at all. But I do want to say that I'm very happy that they did it. This thing that happens about like in the middle of the movie. So yeah, this is just a fun movie. I'm like, you're not gonna get any like deep themes or anything about out of it. It's, you know, it's about family.
Family and magic. Let's do it.
Family, magic, and eat the rich.
Yeah. Pick a card, eat the rich.
Eat the card and then eat the rich. So.
All right.
You've never seen the magic tricks where they eat the card and then like it appears elsewhere?
That sounds very familiar.
They do that sometimes. It's a thing.
You're right.
Yeah. There's also an entire sequence of, because you've got like the horseman team meeting these new kids who also do magic, there's an entire sequence of all of them showing off their magical prowess to one another to see who like is the best at it and stuff like that, like old generation versus the new generation, but a lot more fun because we're just competing over magic and not over ideals.
Yeah, nobody's calling anybody a snowflake or anything.
Yeah, that's not happening.
Yeah, pull a rabbit out of hat. Have a good time.
There's a part at the beginning where Jesse Eisenberg meets these kids for the first time, and he's like basically reading them for filth about who they are as people. And he gets to like Ariana Greenblatt's character, and he's just like, you're like a Gen Z who believes that all the old people have ruined the world for everybody. And there's like a pause and she goes, well, am I wrong?
Right.
And he goes, no. And then he keeps going.
Yeah, sounds about right.
It's great. It's fun. It's just a fun movie.
We love a fun movie.
We do. Next up, let's talk about... Actually, I think we're just about to like jump into the monster section of this entire review. So let's get into Predator Badlands.
Yes, yes, yes. I love this movie. Predator Badlands. It is directed by Dan Trachtenberg. He made 10 Cloverfield Lane, Prey, Predator Killer of Killers. And on the TV side, he did the playtest episode of Black Mirror and the first episode of The Boys titled The Name of the Game. This man does not miss.
Him during playtest explains so much.
Yes, I'm much more of a fan of him than I even realized I was. And it's written by Patrick Eisen, or Eisen. He wrote Prey.
Yay, and I shout also out to him.
Didn't know how to say his name when we did Prey, and I'm sorry. But dude got skills. The movie stars Demetrius Schuster, Koloa Mantangi, and Elle Fanning.
Yep, that's it.
That's about it. And the IMDb summary is... A young predator, outcast from his clan, finds an unlikely ally on his journey in search of the ultimate adversary. Yes, it is so much more fun than it sounds. I will watch any Predator movie Dan Trachtenberg makes from this point on.
Same.
I freaking love this movie.
Yeah, he's made my favorite Predator movies. Like I've only seen five of, there are like eight, I want to say, off the top of my head.
Yeah, I think I've also seen five.
I've seen five of them. He has made my top three.
Same.
This one is probably my second favorite Predator movie after Prey, because I thought Prey was just like, might be a masterpiece in my opinion. I don't know. I think it's fantastic. And
it's really good.
It is. And I thought this one was really good. I just didn't think it was like up to the level of Prey, but I really appreciate, like, I feel like Dan Trachtenberg has found like the thing to make this franchise interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like when you do a movie that's lightning in a bottle, like the original Predator, which I have seen, when you do a movie like that, and then like they start to make a franchise out of it because it was so successful, sometimes you lose track of like, what's the thing that can make it interesting for years to come?
Yeah.
What makes it interesting to people? And I think Dan Trachtenberg has like the concept. He's got the idea. We have Prey, which was, you know, in a different time period about a Native American girl who goes up against the Predator, or against a Predator. Mm-hmm. And then we have this movie, which is like, let's take the format of the Predator, but let's have the Predator be the protagonist this time around.
Yeah, it's freaking great. And, you know, while we're talking about our favorites, my favorite, I think Killer of Killers and this one are tied for my favorite right now, with Prey coming in like right behind them. And I feel like all three of these movies are different enough that like Dan Trachtenberg has found ways to make this interesting, but in ways that feel not the same. Like,
I feel like the general conceit, like the underlying story of like the underdog is common among, that's the common thread among all of these stories, but it's the details that he adds to them that really makes them like pop.
Yeah. He fleshes them out in a way that's like, cinema. He immediately got me on board with caring about and rooting for this Yautja by starting with this family dynamic, which I wasn't expecting. The big bro, little bro situation, their punk ass daddy, who I just want to say, even Teddy Perkins would think that their dad goes too far. Dex's dad is up there, the worst dads ever.
Shout out to Demetrius, who also does the voice of their father in this movie.
Yeah.
This was my Letterboxd review for the movie, because the whole point of like Yautja culture, the point is to be the best predator, right? It's to be the ultimate predator. Mm-hmm. So they're all competing to be the best, basically. And so my Letterboxd review was, the Yautja can stop competing now. Deck is the best predator. Everyone else can go home. That's my boy. I love him so much.
We love Deck.
He's so good. Oh. I think this movie is also very funny. I think it's got a lot more humor than the other than the other Predator movies that Dan Trachtenberg has done, which is very nice.
Yeah. So one of the things I wrote is that like Thea provides a lot more comedic relief than I expected in a Predator movie.
I love her.
But it works. It really works.
It does. And it's funny because I was just about to say, I agree with you about Elle Fanning.
Yeah.
She's so good in this movie. I love her as Thea.
She's fantastic.
She's so fun and so just such an interesting character to have in this movie. And so very much unlike most robot characters that we see in other films.
Yeah, she has a lot of humanity.
And so much life. There's so much life mm-hmm. in that character that makes it, she it makes her so much fun to watch, but also like her dynamic with the Predator. Like the Predator, Deck is almost a straight man.
Yeah, basically. And like just with the stuff that they're doing and going through. And I knew from the trailer that I was going to love Elle Fanning in this movie, in the shot where she's like stabbing something off screen, like viciously. And then she comes into frame and just smiles into the camera. Would you like look at that Deck?
I saw anything more than the first trailer for this movie. So I didn't actually get a sense of what her personality was going to be. So it was such a delight to go into the movie and just like witness this character. And I think it also makes it very interesting because in comparison to she's doing the role of Tessa as well. And Tessa is a very different, like she really embodies both of these characters in different ways. The way that they walk, the way that they talk. She's very good at differentiating. This is the year of like actors really playing multiple characters. And like all of them are probably going to make my actors list because it's insane how good every single one of them is doing it this year. And she is included on that list. Like she's very good at doing the dual role thing. And even then, like Tessa kind of feels like your generic villain, but it's the fact that Elle Fanning is doing both that and doing Fia at the same time. It makes it all the more interesting and her performance all the better.
Yeah. And Tessa is, like you said, it could be a little just like, oh, that's the scary robot. But she has these moments where like she'll do like a verbal callback to something that Deck says earlier, because you know it's a, they have a translator, which I love the way that they do the translation because movies like this, they always have to find a way to, you know, explain how characters understand each other. But it was so simple and straightforward that this android is just like going through her Rolodex of language, and then she starts speaking to him and she's like, oh, I have a translator, you hear Yautja, everyone else hears their language. And I was like, oh good, that's for us. We hear English.
I also really like that Prey didn't do this. Prey is actually in English. I keep reading Prey is actually in English because I've only seen it in Comanche.
Right.
But I like that this movie, like the Yautja have a language and they speak it throughout the entirety of the movie. There's never a point where Deck speaks English.
Yeah.
Just because there is a translator, we as the audience don't suddenly understand Deck. He's not suddenly speaking English. Like, no, he speaks whatever Predator language they came up with for the movie throughout the entirety of it. And I do like, I like the language. I think it's very fascinating and very interesting to just listen to.
Yeah. And we like, we get his subtitles and they make that a part of the story when the other androids who are like less developed, I guess, let's say, than Thea and Tessa are not able to understand what Deck is saying. And he can just speak to her in Yautja and like use that to maneuver around the other androids. I was like, oh, this is freaking great.
Also, another anti-capitalist movie? I feel like
anything with Weyland Yutani is kind of
inherently
anti-capitalist.
Yeah, because they have the whole thing about Thea being like, they made us this way to be more sensitive to the things around us. But then later on, we find out that they made them to exploit the creatures and the land around them as well. So anti-colonial is definitely.
Yeah, like you need to understand these creatures so you can exploit them better.
Yeah, very interesting pattern we have going here. going crazy in the streets. Yeah, I really enjoyed this movie. I like this movie a lot. I came out of it and was like, yeah, this is definitely like one of my favorite Predator movies. I would definitely watch this again. Same with Prey. I would just have a good time watching these. And if Dan Trachtenberg is going to continue making Predator movies, which I hope he does, I feel like he has been enjoying his time making these and they have been really well received.
He definitely does, yeah.
Then I hope he continues this story with Deck because of where the movie leaves off. I would be very interested. Like, he doesn't have to. He could go off and do something else, but I really would love to see where this goes and to learn more about the culture of the Yautja.
Yeah, I'm with it. I definitely want to see more. Also, just like you said, Deck is just so great. He's so cool. And the action shots are cool. The sound design is awesome. Like, the movie looks and sounds great.
It does.
We have beautiful shots of, I think it's called Jenna or Genna. I can't remember. I don't know how the G works in the name of the planet they're on, but
the Death Planet.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of the Death Planet, that's one thing I wanted to say. I really like the way that we see Deck learn over time, like the planet and how it can be used and how it attacks. Kind of like how, this is a common thing in Predator movies, but I think the one most recent in my memory is Prey. Like when we watch Nadu, understand over time how the Predator works and different things like that. And Deck has to do that, but with the planet that he's on. And he has Thea, so it's cheating. But Yautja, they cheat. They always cheat. So it's like a thing. And then by the end, when we get that, I guess like...
when we get to the culmination.
Yeah, where he has found ways to use the different dangers of the planets to his advantage. I was like, hell yeah. Also, Bud. I love Bud. The little creature. Adorable.
Like I said, I think Dan Trachtenberg found the formula, which is either give us a bunch of humans from different time periods defeating Yautja, or give us Yautja going out and doing their hunts on different planets and getting to see their kills and their and like the way that they go about it. Because I think that's also very interesting as well. I also really appreciated the way that he demonstrated how dangerous planets were or certain places were by just having creatures eliminate one another just at random, just have nature at work.
Yeah. Like, oh, that thing was terrifying. Oh, it got killed by a more terrifying thing. Look at that. What a terrible place this is.
The movie even starts that way. And then like he continues to do stuff like that when we even get onto a new planet. So I think that's really cool. I really appreciate the way that he does these movies. I really, yeah, just let Dan Trachtenberg make all the Predator movies.
100%.
All right. Continuing on with monsters. Next up, we have Frankenstein, which is written and directed by Guillermo del Toro, who you guys probably know for doing Pan's Labyrinth, The Shape of Water, Pacific Rim. He's done a bunch of other stuff as well. Mm-hmm. And the movie is based on a book by Mary Shelley, aka the mother of sci-fi. Thank you, Queen. You did what needed to be done. And the movie stars Oscar Isaac, Jacob Elordi, Mia Goth, Christoph Waltz, Felix Kammerer, and Lars Mikkelsen, along with a couple of other people. And the IMDb summary is, Dr. Victor Frankenstein, a brilliant but egotistical scientist, brings a creature to life in a monstrous experiment that ultimately leads to the undoing of both the creator and his tragic creation. Cassie!
No.
Our resident monster lover. You watched Frankenstein.
I did.
I also just finished rewatching it. Hmm. What are your thoughts on the movie?
It fucks severely. Like, it's from the moment I heard Guillermo del Toro is going to do Frankenstein, I was like, okay, that's going to be good. There have been a lot of adaptations of Frankenstein, and most of them have sucked because they're not actually adaptations of the book. They're something else. And this is the closest I've ever seen. And it slaps. That book slaps. This movie slaps. It's just like, yeah, I appreciate that we're seeing Victor for who he actually is, which is a fuck. And the creature gets the sympathetic portrayal that he deserves. Like,
Guillermo del Toro has reached his dream, which is this. It's like his entire filmography has been leading up to this moment. He clearly very much loves this story. Even though this is a very close adaptation of the book, it's still not a one for one.
No, yeah.
Me and Cassie have both read Frankenstein. We had to for high school. Mm-hmm. It was one of the few books I actually enjoyed reading for high school.
I think I read it again in college.
Yeah. Nice. It's a beautiful movie, absolutely stunning, and very much sticks to the point of the novel. I think people imagine it or were expecting some sort of horror action film when really the Frankenstein novel is about humanity, and it is an exploration of the things that make us human, as would be expected when the entire conceit of the novel is that a man creates a man. So it's going to be about what is living? What does it mean to be alive? What does it mean to be a person? And this movie does that extraordinarily well, while also touching upon things like generational trauma, the continuation of cycles, of abusive cycles, relationships between parents and children, because dear God, Victor Frankenstein is a parent who should not be a parent.
So bad at it.
He's so bad at it. Like from the jump. So bad at it. And it's because his dad was bad at it.
I mean, it's not just that. Like,
it's not just that. But like, that's a big part of it. Like, he replicates the behavior of his father and thinks that he's doing a better job at it, even though I guess he doesn't even realize that he himself is a father because he doesn't have an actual baby or child in front of him. He has the semblance of a grown man that he has created in front of him. The facets of behavior in humanity that is demonstrated in this movie, that is written in this movie by Guillermo del Toro, is just so well done.
I do want to say, I felt deeply seen by Elizabeth and her relationship with the creature. Like, girl, Me too. Me too. I get it.
She was like, I am trying to find the purest being I can possibly find. Oh, this thing right here? Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yep. And he's 6'5". Look at that.
You know she would have jumped them bones.
She seemed ready and able. And I do think it's very interesting because watching it this time around, mm-hmm. knowing what would happen in the movie mm-hmm. and what things are changed from the novel, mm-hmm. it was very interesting because in the novel, we do have a period of time where Victor Frankenstein does attempt to create a female companion
yeah.
for the creature.
I wish they kept it in.
And then he goes back on his word. Mm-hmm. I feel like they didn't keep it in because of how long this movie already is. It's 2.5 hours.
I mean, yeah.
But I also think that the story with Elizabeth, the way that they've changed the character of Elizabeth, I think she is meant to kind of fill in that gap of that missing story. She almost is the companion that the creature is looking for.
Yeah, but I mean, that's kind of the point he makes when he asks for it, is like, I can't die. So I just have to yes. live through everything. And that's kind of what she's missing.
When I saw the movie the first time, because I saw it in theaters weeks ago, I do remember thinking while watching the movie the first time, I was like, are they going to take her and make her the bride? Is that where we're going with the movie? And then we didn't. It does feel like she is meant to like fill in that spot. But also because, like you said, she can't live forever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it goes in her speech. That is the brevity of that love is the tragedy, and just mm-hmm. adds further on to the tragedy of humanity, of the creature's humanity.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Guillermo del Toro just has such an understanding of the themes of the novel
yeah.
where he's able to change certain story aspects of it.
Mm-hmm.
And even though this is not one for one what happens in the book, it is something that still presses upon and still pushes what Mary Shelley was trying to say with her novel.
Yeah, it definitely does.
And I think that's important in adaptation. Like, I feel like so many times we try and find adaptations that are one-to-one of the thing that we read or originally mm-hmm, had mm-hmm. and experienced. And sometimes it's been like 200 years since this book was written
yep.
and times have changed and we understand things differently now. And sometimes adaptations should change with the times or update in a certain way. Or sometimes we just think of other ways of executing ideas and themes that still work.
This is one where I don't know how I feel about that, because I do think that in making some changes, he did sort of, the word I want to use is defang the creature, because like making Victor's brother an adult and not having what happens in the novel where the creature's like, yo, I'm gonna fuck your whole life up, happen. Like it creates a more sympathetic portrayal for the creature, which it's Guillermo del Toro, surprise. But
yeah,
I did like, you know, I feel like the "if you will not award me love, I will indulge in rage" would hit harder if he did the, you know what, that kid, I'm gonna kill it. Your wedding night, trash.
That's fair. I do think that's a valid point. I don't think the movie is any worse or better for making changes. I just think that like it is just a great movie, period. Mm-hmm. Just altogether, just a very well written film, a very beautifully shot film. The production design.
Yo, did you watch the
costuming,
like, the little like music behind the scenes thing that's on Netflix as well?
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Oh, it's my God. Like, even just the costuming on Elizabeth is
yeah.
like, oh, her costume is so much elements of like insects, because she loves the creatures that other people don't love. And like, cinema.
Yeah. Guillermo del Toro, that man just be making cinema. What can we say?
He do. He really do.
Y'all could say Pacific Rim ain't cinema, but it is. So,
oh, it's the height of cinema.
Height of cinema. Peak. It is peak.
Also, just like quick shout out. Obviously, this is Guillermo del Toro. He's going to do this. But watching this movie as a trans person, the line like, to you, I am like evil, but to me, I simply am, was like, oh, that hit real
hard.
Ooh, I needed a moment.
This movie feels very poetic in moments.
Also, the created body, like the created life, like, nigga.
Yeah.
This is for me.
It's so good. It's such
also,
a good movie.
Shout out to using real wolves. I didn't think they did that. And then
those
I watched the behind
wolves?
The scenes. They obviously had some CG, but yeah, they used real wolves in the scene with the wolves. Dedication.
Horrifying.
Dedication. I love it. And they built the entire ship, the whole thing.
Oh, yes.
The
I heard about
thing.
That and was like, that's insane. You built
like,
that whole
scale.
Thing? That's crazy.
Like,
that's
oh,
a
the,
very
the
large
level
ship.
Of effort that he and all the people who work with him are willing to put into his films
And that's why it's cinema. I do think that, like, Guillermo del Toro makes movies that are, like, kind of the reason that you go see movies. Whether you're going to see a movie like this, which is about the exploration of our humanity and of ideals and stuff like that, or even if you're just going to see, like, a big blockbuster spectacle like Pacific Rim, there's still an exploration of humanity, of connection in that movie. I think Guillermo del Toro does a great job of doing, like, both the spectacle and the exploration of ideas and humanity.
Yeah, I mean, give it half a month and I'll be doing a presentation on why Pacific Rim is the best depiction of platonic love I've ever seen, because it is. He has such a gift for having such heart and emotion in his movies, and also some bits are just cool as shit.
Also, his Pinocchio movie slaps if you've never seen it.
I haven't seen it. I should.
It's so good. Man, I think I gave that 5 stars. I actually thought that was one of the ones I was like, no, this is brilliant. I should probably see more Guillermo del Toro movies, but he likes to creep into the creepy a lot.
He does,
and
but like,
I don't.
In a good way. In a good way. Like, Kronos isn't that creepy. Well,
one day I will watch Pan's Labyrinth.
Oh, you haven't seen it? Ooh, girl.
It's got the eye monster.
Okay,
dude.
Little bit.
It's a lot. My brain will ruminate on that for a very, very long time.
It's a lot. Cassie, you're a different type of,
no,
you're a different type of girl.
I know.
Yeah, I got to do that one in daylight at home.
Like all that weird stuff.
Yeah. Oh, God, yes, I do. We'll come back to that.
Oh, but speaking of that, important question.
Yo, what up?
That the audience wants to know. Demi, are you joining Team Monster Masher?
No. We're not about to pull a Gabby on me. This is not...
I'm just asking. This is not an allegation. I'm not bringing you to...
I just happen to think that Jacob Elordi is a very attractive man, and that didn't change here. Also... This is a very... Wait, hold on. I want to talk about... This is a good year for very cool, glowy eye effects.
Yo, that glow effect. Hot. Hot.
So cool. So good. Love it so bad.
I love a good glowing eye effect. It's one of my favorite things.
He's got... The creature has a very, very cool one in like one of his eyes.
Which makes sense. Because they're probably eyes from different people.
But yeah, this movie was fantastic. It's amazing. If you are not a person who is into slow, this is a gothic drama. It is not so much horror. I think the most horrific thing about this movie is like occasionally the violence and obviously the dismemberment of human bodies, because how else are you going to make the creature? But like really it's a gothic drama. So if you're not interested in like a slow burn of a story, then it's probably not for you. If you're looking for like a Frankenstein action movie, this isn't it.
Maybe that's I, Frankenstein. I don't know. That one seemed more actiony when that came out.
I don't know. I didn't see it.
Probably. I didn't see it either.
Me neither.
But speaking of seeing things, Demi, if you like glowing eye effects, you should watch it. Welcome to Derry.
Nope. It's okay. Anyways.
Are you watching that?
I am.
Oh, well, let's talk about that.
Speaking of more monsters, I watched The Witcher Season 4, which was created by Lauren Schmidt Hisrich.
Hisrich? I don't know.
One of the two? I'm not sure.
Yeah, one of the two.
But she has also written for the shows The West Wing, Daredevil, The Defenders, and The Umbrella Academy. And The Witcher is based on books by Andrzej Sapkowski. And the show stars Liam Hemsworth, Anya Chalotra, Freya Allen, Joey Beatty, Eamon Farron, Monger Zhang, Lawrence Fishburne, Bart Edwards, and so many other people, because there are so many people in each storyline. And the IMDb summary is, Geralt of Rivia, a solitary monster hunter, struggles to find his place in a world where people often prove more wicked than beasts.
Bet.
This is the first season of The Witcher that has Liam Hemsworth as Geralt of Rivia, which was a big change for the show. And personally, I enjoyed it.
Nice.
I still like had a good time watching the show. I think that Liam Hemsworth, I've never read the books, so... Let's keep this in mind. I don't think he is a better or a worse Geralt. I think that he is a different one. I think he is a Geralt who is less stoic, shockingly enough. He is a Geralt whose emotions shine in his eyes. It's as if he is trying to be stoic, but there is a fracture that is now expressing the emotions that like he feels. I feel so much more like this Geralt likes the people he is around, that he cares about. That like he cares about them like so much, and that he is expressing it somewhat openly rather than repressing those feelings.
Love that. Go to therapy, bitch.
This season there is so much of like him and Yennefer in her own storyline very much openly expressing how Ciri is their daughter. That's their child, and they are doing what they can to protect her. And you can feel the emotion in that, like, hardcore from both of them in the season. If you're looking for me to hate on Liam Hemsworth in the role of Geralt, I'm not going to. I do think he did a good job. I think it took me a couple of episodes to adjust to the fact that this is a new actor playing Geralt, but
fair.
I think that, like, by the time I got to the third episode of the season, I was like, we're good. Bet. Cool. I saw a Tumblr post that said season 4 of The Witcher has plot lines including Merry Band has Monster of the Week horror filled adventure.
Okay.
Powerful sorcerers fighting a war and a very violent journey of self-discovery. These are all true. All right. These are all happening all at the same time. Geralt is having like a D&D adventure over here while he's looking for Ciri. Yennefer's fighting a war with a bunch of sorcerers, and Ciri is out in the world heisting people and joining a merry band of bandits, and it's violent and it is bloody and things go awry, and oh my gosh, the end of that season is horrific and bloody and violent, and nice. It's
we love violence,
we occasionally, yes. I liked all these storylines to varying degrees. My favorite ones were the ones with Yennefer and with Ciri. Yennefer, because Yennefer has been my favorite character throughout the show. People were like, oh, I'm dropping the show as soon as Henry Cavill leaves. I was like, baby, as long as Yennefer is on this show, I am here. I need to know where she's going. I came for Henry Cavill. I stayed for Yennefer of Vengerberg. And Anya Chilich's performance of this character, I think she proves to be like the anchor of the show. Like, her acting has been consistent from the very beginning. She has never once phoned in a season. Her performance just is so good, and she has always shown so much range. That is no different this season. I think episode 6 of this season is probably the best one. It's the really big battle episode that mostly revolves around her and the sorcerers, and just her acting is just so stunning, and she's just so good. Also, the beginning of episode 7, her performance is great. Mama Bear Yennefer is probably one of my favorite aspects of Yennefer. And then I think Freya Allen also just gets to do so much this season with Ciri, playing this girl who thinks that she has ruined the lives of people all around her and trying to figure out where she fits in the world and trying to run away from her destiny, trying to figure out who she is. And also, you know, she has like a fun little romance. I also like to define Ciri's storyline as be gay, do crimes, because that's what she's doing all season.
Right.
But yeah, I think Freya Allen plays the repression of Ciri's feelings very well. And also, her action scenes are so freaking cool. Like, she gets, like, the Witcher-style action sequences, and Freya does a really... If Freya's doing, like, some of the stunts, or whoever her stunt person is, really good job. It looks so cool. This was a fun season. It did feel like it was setting up for the end of the show, which will be next season. They shot both seasons back-to-back, so hopefully there won't be too long of a wait until season 5 comes out, and it'll be the final one, and then the show will be over. But yeah, that's The Witcher season 4. I personally enjoyed it. If you are extremely attached to Henry Cavill and don't want to give somebody else a chance, then don't. But yeah, The Witcher season 4. I enjoyed it. The next show, not really monsters, but, you know, sometimes human beings are monsters. This is All Her Fault. Yeah. Which is a show on Peacock. It was created by Megan Gallagher, who has done some writing for shows Lazarus and Suspicion, but I think she's mostly known for her English shows Wolf and Seizure. All Her Fault is based on a book by Andrea Mara, and it stars Sarah Snook, Dakota Fanning, Michael Pena, Jake Lacey, Duke McLeod, Daniel Monks, Jay Ellis, Abby Elliott, and Sophia Lillis. And the IMDb summary is, Marissa Irvine arrives at 1800 Crescent Hollow Road to pick up her son Milo from a playdate, but the woman who answers doesn't have Milo, sparking a parent's nightmare.
Yikes.
Yikes, fam. The whole show.
I hate to see it.
You hate to see it. No, you do, actually. You hate to see it. It's anxiety ridden is what it is. Literally, the show starts with her showing up at this door, and like slowly but surely you just like keep getting these hints that like, hey guys, her kid's been kidnapped. Her child has been abducted, and she has been tricked into believing that her son was at a play date. And it is horrifying. The stress. I was like, I'm not even in the show, and I am stressed out right now. This is probably one of my favorite shows of the year. the day that I watched it, actually, I think I watched like the first three episodes, and then I went to meet with Dallas and a couple of our other friends for dinner because we had a hangout that night. And then we got home early enough, like we dipped out early enough that I was like, oh, I can go home and watch a couple more episodes of the show, see what else happens, and then I'll go to bed. I stayed up until 3 o'clock in the morning watching the rest of this show.
Jesus.
Dang.
Like, I was so invested in like the story and finding out what happened, what all these character motivations are, who did the thing, who was involved in what. Like, I was so deeply invested, and every episode would end and I'd be like, I can't stop here. I need to continue. I need to know. And that to me is like one of the biggest positives of this show, is that desire to keep watching and to just like, just to be so engaged with the story that you want to stay up until 3 o'clock in the morning to finish it. Probably shouldn't have, but I did. I predominantly wanted to watch it because Sarah Snook is the leading actress in it. I just watched Succession for the first time ever, like last month. And she is one of the best. She plays one of the best characters on Succession. So I was like, oh, she has a new show coming out. I'm going to watch her in that. And dear God, like by the second or third episode, I was like, oh, you're going to cry your way through this whole show. Oh, my God. This is so exhausting. I mean, are you tired?
Her kid got kidnapped. What do you expect?
I know. But I just was like, oh, man, every episode. Are you tired? Do you need water? Sarah Snook is actually like such a powerful actress. She's just so good at what she does. And I think the other person whose performance stands out to me so much is Sophia Lillis, who is an actress I've only seen in Dungeons and Dragons. Obviously, this is a very, very different type of role. And I can't talk too much about her character because it would spoil so much.
Oh.
But she's...
Is she secretly the sun?
Dun, dun. No, she's not secretly the sun.
Did the sun disappear so that she could transition and that's what this is about? Because I'm invested now.
The sun is a small child, guys. That's a crazy
thing. Sophia Lillis is like 20 years old.
The performance that she gives, I was astounded. I was like, oh, like I've heard that she's a good actress from the two of you, but man, her performance in this, there's like one episode that I wish I could talk more about it. I will at the end of the year. Or at the beginning of next year. She's really good. I think the entire cast is very good. Abby Elliott is an actress who we have all enjoyed on The Bear. She plays Sugar on The Bear.
Sugar.
She is playing a more toxic sibling on this television show than on The Bear.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. It's not her fault.
In our bag.
And it's great. I love Jay Ellis from Insecure, so it was great seeing him here. I loved seeing Michael Pena play a serious role. He's playing, well, earlier we were very ACAB. He's playing a good cop.
Okay.
But
nice to have one of those every once in a while.
You kind of have to have those in a show about child abduction because you got to have the cops looking for the kid. But he's very good in this role. I also really love his character has a special needs son who I believe they cast an actual actor with special needs. Hmm. I like the way that they portray that relationship. I feel like a lot of times when you get characters like his son, you get a lot of the parents being like, oh, it's so stressful being a parent to a child with special needs. And oh my gosh, like, almost what feels like the burden of it. And what I appreciated about this show is that despite the fact that we were seeing how difficult it was for him and his wife to handle that, you could also see how much they love their son and how much they like, they're like, no, I would never ask for anything different. And I'm like,
right.
I like that. The very like unconditional devotion to a special needs child. And I think they did a really good job with that in like one episode where they really, really dig into that. But yeah, All Her Fault. It's on Peacock. I really enjoyed the show. I enjoyed the mystery of it. Also, one of the things I really enjoyed about the way that they told the story is that they kind of did it in a very Knives Out way, where very early on in the show, they tell you who did the thing. And then the rest of the show is kind of about here's the motivations and here's how we got to this point.
Okay, interesting.
So I really enjoyed it. It's only 8 episodes. It's a mini series. Also, it was really cool seeing Dakota Fanning play an adult because I don't know if I've ever seen Dakota Fanning play an adult, like an actual adult with a child and who's married. Hmm. And also, like I saw somebody say that the thematic element of the show is very heavy handed. Like the show is called All Her Fault, right? So like thematically, the show is about how women are consistently blamed for things that aren't their fault necessarily, but we want to blame women. There's a point in the show where like people are blaming the mom for the child being kidnapped. Like, oh, how did you not know that this was a thing that was happening? Or like Dakota Fanning's character also gets blamed for something like, oh, how did you not know this about the person that you hired? They do this in different fashions throughout the show of like, oh, why did she do this? Why does she do this? Or like, there's a point where we find out that Dakota Fanning's character, her husband, like, is really bad at taking care of their son. And like, they kind of do this like demonstration of how, like, when he takes care of the kid, it's kind of like he's babysitting. But when she's taking care of the kid, like, that's her primary job, despite the fact that she has a career. And so it's expected on her to do the like the motherly due diligence of taking care of the child. But for him, even though he's the father, that amount of responsibility is not put on him. So in the end of, at the end of the day, everything is all her fault when it comes to the child. The show does that a lot. That's all her fault. I really enjoyed it. Highly recommend. I had a great time. Well, I feel weird saying I had a great time.
Fair.
But I did. I was deeply enthralled.
Nice.
And that's it. That's all of our reviews that we have for the day.
Yes, 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 it is. We did it. We did half a dozen reviews. We fed you. Are you full? Good. Thank you for listening to all of it. Cassie, don't make weird faces at me.
I'm going to ask you guys one question and let's just speed run through it. Okay. Is there anything that you guys are super looking forward to coming up?
Arlene Ernest got renewed for season 2 and that's all I need to be happy in life. So give me that gross shit. I'm so down.
You're also getting a Fallout season 2 pretty soon.
New Vegas. Oh, that's going to fuck so hard. It's this is a good time for me.
And then we're getting Percy Jackson the week before we get Fallout. So,
oh my God, stuff to live for. Let's go.
Cassie's eating over here.
Yeah. Good time to be Cassie. So I'm going to use this time to say that I just watched season 2 of the Vince Staples Show and it is very fun and it's very weird. And I need more people to watch it because I'm pretty sure Netflix is about to cancel it. Cause you know how they do.
They do.
They do.
The lack of promotion for both that show and The Witcher, like, non-existent.
Wild
times.
Yeah,
The Witcher is wild.
Especially crazy for The Witcher, because it's like, yo, this was one of your big ones.
Yeah.
And y'all just like, hey, just slide it out when nobody's looking. But, yeah, watch the Vince Staples Show if you think you'd be into that. If you like, Atlanta's the easiest comparison. If you like Atlanta, give it a shot. It's like that, but Long Beach and Vince Staples instead of Donald Glover. But yeah, give it a shot. Don't let Netflix cancel it immediately.
The Michael Jackson biopic Michael just released a trailer, and it is one of the greatest trailers I've ever seen. The music mix on that is insane. Also, shout out to Kendrick Sampson, who plays Quincy Jones and does like basically all the dialogue in that trailer and is also in that trailer. He is a friend of the family that I've known since I was a teenager. He's a really, really dope, real cool dude. And then, yeah, we talked about Fallout coming out soon. Percy Jackson released a trailer that's coming out soon. I'm a Toy Story girly. Like, my top 5 Pixar movies, 4 of them are Toy Story movies. So I'm very excited for Toy Story 5, even if the rest of the world is not. I'm very interested to see what they do with the toys versus the digital age storyline that they've got going on there. I think that's a really good pitch. Oh, man, there was a trailer for something else that I was, like, super freaking excited for, too. Devil Wears Prada teaser came out and I'm excited to see that. That teaser gave us nothing, but but I'm excited all the same.
Go girl, really give us movie. Nothing.
Give us nothing. Yeah, those are like all the things. Mighty Nein, which is a show that's going to be coming out this week, actually, in a couple of days, depending on when this episode drops. They released their first episode ahead of time and I've watched it. It's both on Amazon Prime and it is on YouTube. It is amazing. That first episode is so good and so different from The Legend of Vox Machina. Just highly recommend. It's amazing. Wow. Also, it's like a 40-minute animated show, which we don't really get. So it's very, very cool.
Nice.
Oh, also, quick shout out to the Super Mario Galaxy movie trailer, mainly because...
Hey.
Rosalina was gender before I realized that Rosalina was gender, so I'm just, oh, I'm living my best life.
I don't know what that means, but I'm happy for you.
I know what that means, and I'm happy for you.
You. We covered both sides of being happy for you.
We did. Oh, I didn't say this earlier in the Frankenstein review. Shout out to Lauren Collins, who is one of my favorite actresses from Degrassi, for her small role in Frankenstein. That was very exciting.
Is that Paige?
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Look at me knowing stuff.
All right, that's it, guys. That's all we got for you today.
That's it. We did it. Look at us. Look at y'all. Look at everybody. All right, thank you, everybody, for listening to a talk for an hour about different things. Thank you, Crown Digital, Brandon, and Aya for putting us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Thank you to me for editing and putting us on YouTube and talking about Badlands with me because I love that movie so much.
I had a great time.
I can't wait to talk about it again at the end of the year because I will be doing that. Cassie, thank you for repping for the Monster Mashers, as
Anytime.
You do. We can always count on you for that, and I love that.
This is, I should have seen Badlands because I probably would have had thoughts.
You would have.
I think you would like it. I think you should check it out.
I think also, I feel like if you like Prey, you will like Badlands.
Fair.
Oh, I'm super fucking excited for it. I just haven't seen it yet.
Yeah. I think you'll dig it. As always, you can read this in the comments, guys, gals, theys, thems, ladies, ladies.
Also, I keep hearing something about a hype button. I don't know what that is, but if you see it, if it's on here, hit the hype button.
On YouTube?
Yeah, I was hearing about that. I was like, I don't know what that means, but...
Ain't that right? Hype now?
Yeah, I think so.
Hype us up. I spent so much time on YouTube, I ain't seen a hype button.
Yeah, same.
Anyway, hit the hype button. We're also on Instagram and Tumblr at Creative Differences Podcast. We're on Facebook.com/Creative Differences PC. We're on TikTok at Creative Differences Pod. If you want to talk to me about how dope Predator Badlands is, or if you want to talk about the Vince Staples Show and how it has a surprising amount of storylines tied to O.J. Simpson, you can find me on Instagram or Letterboxd or Serialized at A King Named Simba.
If you want to talk to me about... Oh, no, I'm 12 seasons into Grey's Anatomy, so that's most of my life.
Wait, you're 12 seasons in now? You were like 9 seasons in when I was at your apartment a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, girl. We move fast over
here.
She's been moving.
Anyway, you can find me on Blue Sky at Sassy Soothsayer.
Hey, guys. Are you excited for Wicked? Because I'm excited for Wicked. Keep an eye out on my Letterboxd at Demi Joua, where I will be definitely reviewing Wicked after I've seen it on Thursday, because I am doing the double feature. So I will be watching the first movie and then the second one back to back in theaters. And I'm super excited because this is the closest to a theatrical Wicked experience that I'm going to get since I saw it at the Pantages. So hyped up. Keep an eye out, guys. Next week, hopefully, we will be reviewing Wicked for Good, potentially the biggest movie of this year, aside from Sinners. But like, this is like the anticipated biggest movie of the year.
Mm-hmm. Oh, also, Gabby. Can't forget Gabby. You can find Gabby on Blue Sky at I Eat Fun Twinks for Breakfast. It is all one word.
Why?
There are no underscores.
Why?
We're going to find out.
Stay tuned. Mm-hmm. All right, this one different. Bye. So, Demi, I don't know if you remember this. In The Running Man, there's a breakfast cereal called Fun Twink.
I do.
I just saw an interview with Edgar Wright, or read an excerpt of an interview with Edgar Wright, where he says that is in the book, and either that term was not around when Stephen King wrote it, or maybe Stephen King did not know the term and what it meant. So he was just like, what's a fun name for a cereal? So the cereal is called Fun Twinks, and that's in the movie.
That reminds me of Star Wars jazz music being called jizz up until recent years.
Yeah,
so,
same energy.
A fun related fact. This is going to go a bit long, but who cares? I'm playing a game called Dispatch. And
oh, how is it? I want to play so bad.
I got to ask you about that later.
Holy fucks. There is a line in that where someone goes, so are you going to eat those twinks? So
I've been seeing that. And those twinks are cream filled.
Hey. I would not elaborate. That's the best kind of twink.
Shout out to the Critical Role team because I know that they had a part in that video game.